This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm your host Mike and I'm joined by an abundance of insight in the form of Nick Gillard and Chris Clark as we give you a bumper end of season pod. We'll try not to dwell on the Liverpool game too much. Oh, and the under-23s got promoted in their very first season as a Category 1 team. Go them. We'll be back after this.
The Match Report. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Alexa, play Back of the Nest podcast.
Playing Back of the Nest, CPFC podcast, from Amazon Music.
Back of the Nest, now on your Alexa device and Amazon Music.
Hi, gentlemen. This was supposed to be an end-of-season extravaganza, but we've had some sick notes in and stuff, so we've sorted the wheat from the chaff, just the three of us. I hope that's okay with you guys. We're going to get into... First off, get into the Palace news this week. And a couple of us yesterday were at the under-23s. Incredible playoff victory against Sunderland. Chris, talk the listeners through a night at Selhurst, a Monday night at Selhurst.
Well, what a fantastic experience. I mean, you know, some of us had also had the privilege of being back for the playoff semi-final and indeed for the less... successful game against Arsenal. Less said about that, the better. But we did get to see to say goodbye to Roy in style as well. Last night was fantastic. The atmosphere in the ground, considering that it's an under-23s game, you know, it was really, really impressive. The, you know, we were singing for the vast majority of the game. My voice has only just recovered now. So, you know, you've got the benefit of my dulcet tones, largely thanks to water and paracetamol after recovering from that. We met at the Clifton. Nice. And had a few sherbets before the game, behaved ourselves in terms of staying in the ground. And you know, while the game itself was not hugely eventful, frankly, a 0-0 board draw, including quite an edgy wait during the extra time. Ultimately, the Palace 11 triumphed on penalties. It was a lovely night, and you know, it was brilliant to see so many faces there.
Yeah, I think the fans have got to take some serious credit for the penalty shootout, because they were relentless towards the Sunderland players. I'd have probably skied mine as well. I'd have done a Hennessy, like that poor kid that ended up. They had to drive all the way back up to Sunderland after losing 5-3 on penalties, not getting promoted. He must be absolutely gutted today. It's going to take him a while to get over it. But I don't know, it was written in the stars. I didn't feel like we were not going to lose that penalty shootout. Just wanted to say a couple of things on the players that I thought really impressed me watching it live. Jay Rich Bagley, really good. I mean, I hope he gets some minutes next season. It's always annoying to try and tell which players which when they don't have their names written on the shirt. But I thought him and Hallam were probably my two favourite players on the night. What about you, Chris?
Well, for me, Jake O'Brien really, really stood out in both games, particularly in the semi, actually, more than last night. But, you know, I really think, you know, while there have been some who've said that he's probably not quite physically ready, I'd like to see him get some minutes in the Premier League, you know, maybe in a game, you know, towards the latter stages when we're, you know, we've comfortably got a cushion or something. But I think he's ready to perform. And frankly, he can't be worse than some of the lumbering centre-back performances that we've seen this year. So I really want to see him get some minutes next time.
Oh, let's keep positive. Come on now. Nick, your thoughts?
Can I ask a question at this juncture? I saw some of the videos. The crowd did look fantastic. First question, how cold was it? Second question, well, you're not going to see the players' names through all that rain anyway, even if they were on the shirt. So that's more of a statement than a question. And the third, more important one is, how's the style of play different under Derry with the under-23s compared to Roybal?
Well, I'll jump in first and say that I was given a bit of a beer jacket by the fact that Luke, who's been on this pod before, was drinking with us. And just before we left the pub, ordered us both three shots of dark rum in a cup, got me to pay for it as well. But that definitely helped with the staying warm. There wasn't that much COVID social distances going on in any block either. So that probably helped. It was a bad night weather wise. You know, the press were making out it was freezing. It wasn't that cold, but it was pretty grim. You know, wet socks all around. The game, it was 120 minutes at 0-0. So, I mean, that says something itself. I think defensively, Palace were very strong. Going forward, I don't think... I mean, considering the semi-final was absolutely end-to-end stuff, it didn't have that much. I don't know. Maybe Chris wants to comment differently, but I would say that it was a very nervy affair. You know, a typical playoff final affair.
Yeah, I would agree. The playoff final itself was definitely a far more nervy, tight performance and a traditional setup. Whereas there was a bit more experiment in the semi. You know, there was actually a point where we were three at the back for a period. So he's clearly willing to change it up depending on the circumstances. And obviously the other thing to say is that with both of the games going to 120 minutes, there were a lot of subs. So I'm not sure that, you know, necessarily all the people who performed in those games are necessarily regulars for our, you know, for the under-23s. You know, they may well have been, you know, using the depth of the squad in this case.
Yes, it's worth saying that there's a big old article on the Palace website now talking you through the entire season. The first season as a Category 1 team and they get promoted, so it is awesome. 2,759 of us or something were there and we were very lucky to. No, not everyone can go at the moment and not everyone's comfortable with going, but it was a great night. Let's move on to some news that came out today at the time of recording. The signing of Jacob Montes. And we've got a clip straight from the Palace website. And I believe it's Chris Grierson speaking to the man himself. So, Sam, producer Sam, please hit it.
Jacob, welcome to Crystal Palace Football Club. How excited are you to have signed?
Extremely excited. It's been a dream, obviously, to be a professional soccer player since I could walk, really. So to be able to sign for a Premier League club is incredible.
What's your history in your career so far?
So I grew up in South Florida, played youth soccer there, or football, actually, I should say. I went through the college system. So I played for Georgetown University for 4 years, just graduating now. We were national champions in 2019 for the first time in program history, so that was amazing. I play center, attacking mid, center mid, anywhere through the midfield, really. I can play left, right. An attacking-minded player, I'd like to say I'm kind of creative on the ball.
What have you noticed about the differences in what you're playing in the States?
Just the intensity and the speed of play, everything about it is a really high standard. Everyone kind of knows their role and they do it really well, no matter what. So it's just really the speed of play, I think that's the biggest difference.
What do you hope that the next year has in store for you?
I want to try to make a good impression, do whatever I can, perform at the highest level.
He's got a very attractive voice, hasn't he? Very, very sexy, low baritone voice. Interesting one. Came out of left field. I don't think anyone's expecting anything to be announced on a new signing today. Let's be honest. He's probably not the signing to replace Eze while he recovers from his Achilles injury. But what we do have in the way of insight is a quick voice note from our own Patrick, who obviously is American. Has been involved with with training youngsters in football over there. So we asked him thoughts on this guy and on where he's come from, and he gave us a little voice note. So let's have a listen to that.
Quick word on Jacob Montez, the new signing Palace made from Georgetown University. Little bit I know of him. I saw him play once. He played against my alma mater, St. John's University. They played in the same conference. Technically very good player, good passer. Like the way he moves, he's young, good legs, obviously. You know, moves about well. The school he goes to, Georgetown, were national champions, college champions in 2019. One of the best programs in the country. They annually put players into the pro leagues here in America. So I'm looking for him to probably be an under 23 player. But honestly, at his age of 22, if we gave him a chance, I think he can make it in the first team. But we'd have to kind of really give him some good coaching. But I like the idea we signed an American University player. And again, I think he can be decent. Cheers.
Well, that's some high praise from Patrick there. I mean, not a lot any of us can add. None of us had heard of him before today. But it's some good signs. Saw that Scott Banks has also been drafted into the Scotland squad. So we've got some young talent coming through. And let's just end Palace This Week news with a clip about Roy. I don't think we need to discuss it anymore. Everyone's got their opinions. Everyone's very grateful for the time he's had at the club. But let's just finish with a quote from Andros Townsend on the great man himself.
He's been incredible. I think now Crystal Palace are seen as a Premier League outfit, and I think that's down to Roy Hodgson. Before he came in, we were flirting with relegation every year. I saw a stat other than his first few months, we haven't been in the relegation zone since he's been here. So that's what he's done. He's made us a solid Premier League outfit. Unfortunately, we couldn't go that one step further and break into the top 10, but hopefully we can do that next year or get closer to that next year.
Some serious background noise there. Someone even being told to shush. Excellent. I mean, we've all got our opinions on Roy, and people on this pod range from those who've wanted Roy gone for a long time to those that would probably still happily have him for another year. I don't think there's a lot else we can say about it other than four big years for the club, four huge years for the club, and I think it's some pretty big shoes to fill. Let's get on to talking about his very last game in charge, Liverpool away. I don't want to dwell on it, gentlemen, because it was a pretty nothing game. It's a quick thoughts from you, Nick, then you, Chris, and I'll give a few stats on the game, and then I think we'll probably get to the end of the season questions rather than dwelling on a game that wasn't particularly memorable, was it?
It started so well, didn't it?
Townsend, first 5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, Townsend with his narrow miss. But the difference in quality between the teams was vast, wasn't it? And we just didn't stand a chance. Maybe we could have been a little bit more attacking, but we couldn't string many passes together before a Liverpool player was on us and won possession again. So they had something to play for. We didn't. Before the game, you know, we cast our mind back a few years to when we stopped Liverpool winning the league, making Suarez cry. Although he did have a good weekend, didn't he? Scoring that goal for Atletico and putting one over on Barcelona, we sold him. So I wasn't expecting too much, and I was half expecting another 7-0 drubbing. But when you've got the team out we did and some of the subs that were made towards the end, it just made me even gladder all over that the season was over.
Yeah, and I can't disagree with, you know, much of what you said there, Nick. I like you said, I mean, it started well, and I was actually, you know, pretty heartened with the way the performance went. It's one of those games where, you know, if a chance goes in, it changes the whole direction of a match, you know, and if you imagine, you know, that Andros' shot had just been, you know, that inch one side of the post rather than where it went, then, you know, it could have been a very different game. But as it turned out, you know, we didn't take our chances. They did. I have to say, you know, I mean, listening to the, you know, the commentary and also looking at the reaction of Jurgen Klopp on the sideline when it went 2-0, you know, it looked more like they'd won the Champions League rather than qualified for it. So, you know, I mean, that's undoubtedly sour grapes on my part. But, you know, while he is clearly a great coach and a pretty good man by all accounts, he's starting to really annoy me now.
Interesting. I think they've had a rough old time this season in terms of injuries and that kind of thing, but there's plenty of pods about Liverpool, so if you want to listen to one of those, the Anfield Rap probably gets about 200 listeners for every one that we get, so there you go. Looking at whoscored.com, the Bible for stats, the only person in our team to get 7 out of 10 or higher was Townsend, who had a decent enough game, but everyone else, very average scores. They had 19 shots. We had 5. I can't remember the other 4. I can only remember one, to be honest. One corner against their 14 and only 30% possession across the game. So it was definitely one to forget. To be honest, I think a lot of us were refreshing feeds for other games. The main thing for me was I really, really, really didn't want Brighton to get 3 points, knowing that their goal difference was so much better than ours. And it was great that they didn't, and they've ended up below us again. And that is all I really cared about. Nick, do you want one last word on this game?
Yeah, just a couple of points. The ref was rubbish. I did think Mane pushed Ward before he scored the first goal for them. Definitely a two-handed push. Wasn't looked at again on VAR or anything. And like a lot of teams we've played against us, we're known for breaking. When it looked like we were going to break, we were fouled and had Terence Trent Arnold, or whatever his name is, Derby, been booked for a cynical foul. I think it was on Wilf or maybe even Jeffrey Schlupp. He'd have been red carded for shoving IU in the back, and they were on the wind up. They were trying to wind us up all along, and I think they did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, we've said in the past that we need to do that more, so I think it's hard to criticise at times. Salah's dive really pissed me off. But other than that, I think maybe IE was lucky to stay on the pitch. I don't think there's a lot more to be said on that. Let's get on to more positivity. Obviously, we ended up with 44 points in 14th. And rather than this just being about that game, we thought we'd discuss the whole season. The fact that we've lost a manager, the fact that a lot of our players' contracts are coming to the end, that kind of thing. And the fact that it's the weirdest season I can ever remember. What I asked people of this parish was a few questions about the season. Asked them their favourite player for the season, game of the season, favourite Roy moment, what's disappointed you this season, and just a discussion about whether the season was a success or not. So I'll start with you two gents, then we've got a few clips from a couple of other members of the team, including Hambo. You're probably expecting him to be presenting today, but the man is on holiday, enjoying this incredible sunny patch that the UK is going through, where we've had rain for about the last 38 days straight. So why he's chosen now to go away, I don't know, but we can ask him that next time he's on a pod. Just to say, obviously, we're calling this the end of season pod, but as there's some transfer rumours, as people get signed, there will be some more. And I'm sure Hambo will be back because you will be missing him. So, Chris, let's go through. First of all, your player of the season, please.
Difficult to single one out. I mean,
You've got to single one out. Don't worry, I'm going to do it.
Feels really invidious not selecting Zaha. But I'm not going to. Breakthrough player would be Tyrick Mitchell. Eze obviously has arrived and made a real impact, but it's got to be Guaita for me.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need much more explanation than that. Nick, your player of the season?
I'm sick of people having goalkeepers as our player of the season. It happens far too often. It says so much about the rest of the team. had Benteke performed for the whole of the season like he did the end of the season, he would have coasted it, because those last few games were the performances of the season for me. But Tyrick Mitchell, I can't really remember him putting a foot wrong the whole season. And it's nice to have somebody coming through, blighted a bit by injuries. Yes, Guaita was good, but Tyrick is just something to look forward to, which we haven't had a lot of. So, yeah, I'm glad with him.
Yeah, I mean, he was a bit of a diamond in the rough the last couple of games as well. I was going to go Guaita too. And deep down, I absolutely would. Just to be different, I'm going to go Eze, because not necessarily because I think that he did more for the team than Guaita, but to me, he's the signal of the change for Palace. He's going to signal in a new era, and I'm very excited about that. Your game of the season, Chris?
Right. Okay. Well, that one, you know, I mean, it's hard to see past Brighton away. Obviously, that you know, extremely memorable, very late winner when we, you know, definitely not been the better team. Home to Spurs will have a special place in my heart too, because it was one of the only two matches we were allowed to go to. But ultimately, being the better team as we beat Man U away earlier in the season is the one for me.
Fair enough, Nick.
Yeah, I was going to go with the Man United game. But my favourite game of the season was actually Arsenal last week, because I got to go. I thought we played pretty well. It was great to see players in the flesh. Great to see people I hadn't seen for a while, like Chris. And be in the crowd. Like you said, it was a bit of a surreal season not being able to go. Other than that, yeah, Brighton, I was on the watch along with DR for that. And the scenes at the end were incredible, because we were crap. We didn't deserve to win. And to beat your rivals like that is just so good. And you can contrast it with the earlier game in the season against Brighton, where we were pretty much the same, but 1-0 up, and just sat back and let them come back into it. So, yeah. For best game, probably Brighton, just because of the lulls.
I mean, you did at the Arsenal game get to see Pepe score a brace. And obviously, as the Arsenal fans are always saying, he is the better version of Wilf, isn't he? The $72 million, well worth spent. Obviously, that would be your game of the season, otherwise, wouldn't it? For me, I couldn't choose the Brighton game just because I was there the season before, and that game cannot be touched. I mean, it was amazing this season. DR's reaction on the watch along, incredible. But when you're not there, it's not the same. Same with the Leeds game earlier on in the season. Excellent result. Proper flowing football, how I've wanted Palace to play. But I'm going to go the Spurs game, because I was there. The equaliser that I really didn't expect us to get, we all went absolutely mad in the Homesdale. And that is just a really happy memory for me, one of the happiest memories that I can remember in Selhurst. So that's mine. This is a tougher one. Your favourite Roy moment? Now, we asked listeners this, and I'll tell you the most popular one in a moment, but let's get your favourite Roy moments, Chris.
Right, well, I'm only going to pick one for this one. You know, I'm not even going to try and stretch the rules of the game. For me, you know, football is all about rivalries and hatreds and dislikes and how you live out that tribal thing. And for me, Man U will always be that team because of stealing RFA Cups in both 1990 and 2016, scumbags. So for me, I've travelled to that ground and desperately hoped to see us not just scrape a point, but actually win a game. And so being there when IU scored in 2019, when we were ahead, Daniel James got that equaliser, cruel equaliser on the 89th minute, and then for PVA to come up and for us to win the game was just absolute scenes, delirious, you know, rows ahead, up and down, everywhere. For me, you know, nothing will touch that until we actually beat them in an FA Cup final, which I hope happens before I die.
Excellent. Well, let's hope that you, in the nicest possible way, don't live to be 200. Nick.
That's cruel. Are we talking about Roy moment this season or Roy moment of all time?
Overall, now that the man's finished his tenure.
Okay. Because my favourite moment this season was when he announced his retirement, but of all time has to be when he got us out of the relegation zone in that first season that he was here, because it was incredible how he managed to turn that team around. And it was like Tony Pulis on amphetamines. It was just that good at getting us out of that scrape. So lots and lots of kudos for Roy for doing that. I'm not sure any other managers could have done it. He instilled something in us that kept us going. So.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's arguable, I suppose, that Big Sam had done it as well before. But I can tell you now that the most popular vote from listeners was the game after the 7 defeats in a row, Chelsea 2-1, where he pulled out the 2 false number 9s, which was absolutely incredible. I unfortunately was at a wedding that day in Leicester, so was watching it on a small phone rather than being at Selhurst. And that was one of the most I was distraught. I mean, obviously we won, but the fact I wasn't there really, really hurt. In fact, I had to sell my ticket on whatever that ticket resale site was called, that Palace had a thing with for a while. For people that were there, I don't doubt I can see why that was the number one. For me, turning around the game at Stoke, where we were 1-0 down at half-time, that was Roy at his best with half-time tinkering. I know that probably doesn't stick in everyone's memory quite as much, but that stuck out for me. And then Arsenal, as far as I remember, we were away. I'd had a few beverages. We were 2-0 down and pulled it back to 2-2 and silenced what was already quite a quiet ground. Those are my two, but yeah, I can see why the Chelsea 2-1 is top.
Just to add to that, while we're talking about Roy, what was so frustrating and why I chose him leaving as my favourite moment this season was we knew he was capable of pulling results out the back. Do you remember the tactical masterclass he did against Man City? I think we were away to them. We either beat them or drew 2-2, I think. And you think, well, if you can do that, why have we put up with the same thing week in, week out for the last 2 years? We know he's got it in him to actually outwit opposing managers. And that seemed to go. And alas, I came to not like him very much, which was a real shame because I loved him.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And the boat that came second was obviously Andros's goal in the 3-2 Man City game, in people's favourite Roy moments. But what I would say, as it's me presenting today, I just think we've said enough about Roy's bad sides in other pods. And I know Hambo is right when he says that sometimes we see people that have gone with rose-tinted spectacles. You know, there was plenty of people that said Jedinak was on his last legs. There's plenty of people that are saying goodbye needed to be changed. And as soon as they go, everyone gets sentimental for it. But I just think now he's gone. I don't really see the point in thinking about the negative side anymore. We've stayed up. We've got another season in the Premier League. Let's see how it goes next season. Similarly, I don't want to talk about how it's a risk because we all know that. But I think that's been said to death. So this is a difficult one. Your disappointment for the season, Chris.
And yeah, I want to question the premise behind this. Do you mean like the, you know, in general, the concept of what was most disappointing, or do you mean like in terms of a specific player?
I originally thought of player, but you can do it. You can see it however you see fit.
Okay, right. Well, I mean,
unless it's a bid to just cop out, in which case, no.
No, don't worry, it's not. I mean, frankly, I mean, yeah, my biggest disappointment overall was just the fact that, you know, it was utterly predictable, but Roy didn't want to give youth a chance more. You know, I think we've been safe and there have been opportunities for that. I've also been pretty, you know, I mean, I think the loss of Eze and the missing out on the opportunity to see Ferguson and what he can do through these horrendous injuries that they've both got is really disappointing. It's not been Luca's best season, and PVA has underperformed considerably and has rightly been supplanted by Mitchell now, but the one I'm going to...
So which one of those? Come on.
Well, it's actually, I'm coming to my real one. So the one that I'm actually really disappointed about is just that Kelly hasn't got more game time. There have been so many injuries at centre-back, and I can't see why we've gone with an out-of-position midfielder and, you know, very slow, older defenders rather than Martin Kelly, who we know can do a job for us. So that for me is the one, is the fact that Kelly hasn't been given more game time.
Interesting. And I've got to say, obviously saw Liverpool game only on the TV. He had one of the sharpest haircuts I've ever seen. Absolutely. Like, it was whoever did it is a fade specialist. That's all I can say. Absolutely perfect. Nick, your disappointment for the season.
Well, the major disappointment was not being able to go, apart from once.
Don't cop out with that. We're obviously that, but yeah, something better. Come on.
We've got such an attacking-looking team on paper that it was disappointing that we weren't more attacking. I agree completely with what Chris said about Kelly and other players and bringing youth through, but we should be more exciting. We should have been more exciting because we've seen moments of it. And I know, being a Palace supporter, I think Sean Hughes wrote about it in one of his books many, many years ago, that Palace has always been moments of brilliance followed by moments of abject shiteness. But the brilliance has been few and far between. I mean, when we have seen it, it was really good. I mean, at the start of the season, we saw Eze, we saw Benteke, and we saw Zaha link up really, really well. Eze was in the middle. Then, for some reason, shoved out of position on the wing. And I think he could have been so much more had he played in the central position that all our QPR friends said that he was best at. So, yeah, playing players out of position.
Fair enough. For me, I'm going to go with Sakho. I think the fact that there was murmurs from the club that he was unhappy and he wanted to go, obviously we're not probably going to see him play in a Palace shirt again. The injury put an end to that, and probably put an end to his move, his dream move to Lyon as well. It's just been a quiet, sad end to the career of a man that I thought probably could have become one of the real Palace defensive legends. It's sad for me. I wish we could have just got one excellent last season out of him, but there we go. Them's the breaks. And one last question, and I want a one sentence answer tops. Was the season a success, Chris?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And Nick, that's fine. Nick.
Yes, we stayed up. No, we didn't capitalise on having seven seasons so far in the Premier League and actually pushing into the top half. So 50% so.
Yeah, I think that's probably where most people are. So we asked the rest of the team to leave us some voice clips, and we can't really have the end of season pod without hearing from Hambo himself. So I asked him to answer all of the questions we've just discussed. So here's our leader himself, Christopher Hambling, on those particular discussion points.
Hambo here. Looking back at the season, I think player of the season is a tough one because, the second half of the season has kind of detracted from who was absolutely outstanding at the start, and that was Vicente Guaita. I think, the number of saves he made, the key moments that he contributed to in getting us the points total that we got, I think he was absolutely vital, because the second half of the season belonged to Eze, really, in terms of making a real impact and the goals that he scored. And, when you look back at the season, those are the kind of, he's the one where you kind of remember those moments more. But I think for me, player of the year has to be Vicente Guaita. Game of the season's easy because there weren't a lot of great performances, and there were probably a lot of better performances than the Brighton game, but it has to be the way we beat Brighton. And especially kind of as it was part of the resurgence of Christian Benteke, scored by his recent standards a lot of goals once he got going. And, there's nothing really better than a last-minute victory against Brighton. So definitely that was game of the season for me. Still about the favourite Roy moment, is that in general or in the season? It's hard to think about this season, my favourite Roy moment. But, overall, in Roy's 4 years, I think the best thing that he ever did was, adjust the way we were playing, when he took over and sort of knitted everybody together and gave us organisation and gave us a bit of freedom to play for a while. And you go back to that period when Loftus-Cheek was at the peak of his powers for us, and it was a really enjoyable time to watch Palace. So I think those were the best moments. But, he also really did address how badly we'd been playing under him against Brighton initially. And, we actually can say without certainty we were very much up for those games under Roy by the end, if not maybe the first couple that we played under him. So, yeah, really happy. I'll give him credit for that. And overall, did a tremendous job over 4 years. The disappointment of this season, 100%, was the failure to both use the squad and to use new players and young players. That's 100% the thing that we'll look back on and say he didn't do the best of over the years. He didn't use players right. And this season in particular, kept the same tactical system for way too long. And it was only later in the season that he changed it. And we saw Palace play some better football. So my disappointment was his inflexibility in both selection and tactics. So I think we could have done better. And whether or not the season was a success, I think depends entirely on what you think of the squad. I think the squad is better than it delivered on. But ultimately, for Palace, it's still a success to stay in the Premier League. A lot of people don't like that. But I think if you ask Roy this question, he would tell you it was a successful season. If you ask the board, they'd probably say the same thing. But I think everybody recognises that we probably should have kicked on better than we did. You know, we ended the season not the best. And, you know, we cost ourselves a couple of places in the league at the least. And that, again, restricts the amount of money for the next person. So overall, decent season, but I wouldn't use the word success myself. Hope everyone enjoyed what we did this season in terms of back of the next content. And yeah, we'll speak to you all soon.
Sage words from the man himself. Yeah, can't disagree with much of that. It's interesting that we've all come up with different disappointments. And we also have the words of Patrick O'Connor. So, producer Sam, please play his words too.
This is PLC, my player this season, Eberechi Eze. My game of this season, the win over Leeds at home. Favourite Roy moment? I'm going to struggle for that, honestly. I'm not trying to be funny, I'm just going to struggle. The first win versus Chelsea at home when Kabai and Wilf scored. This point of the season, honestly, just not giving it a go in the cups, finishing as low as we did. Seeing the success, absolutely not. For me, we could have achieved much more if we had been more forward-thinking with the way that we played, with our attitude, with our signings. So for me, very disappointing season. PLC out.
So there you go. Succinct from Patrick.
That makes a change.
We could have gone all day with asking everyone else similar questions, but I think you've got a nice spread of answers there. And essentially, I think we all came to the conclusion that it was a mixed season. And I think we're all quite excited for what's happening next season and the changes that are going to come to us in the summer. We'll get to what we think about that a little bit more when we go over the listener comment. But before that, we're going to have a quiz from producer Sam. I don't know what to expect here. I'm two and a bit beers in, so my speed of answering might be a bit slower than the other two. I've just got to say on that, actually, I was having a nice sharp Singer beer, and while Hambo's quote came on, I've swapped to Moretti, and it's very disappointing. But yeah, let's get to Sam's quiz. Sam, can you tell us more about what you're about to subject us to for the next few minutes?
I don't know if I want to. The element of surprise is just too tempting. But I have gone quite season-centric. Unusual.
All right, so it's a quiz about this season in general, is it?
Yeah, so there's a few questions about Palace's season. There's a few questions about the season in general for other teams as well.
Okay, and can listeners play along?
If they want, yeah.
All right, well, if you absolutely cane all three of us, please do send a message and tell us that we shouldn't be doing a podcast about football because we know nothing about it. let us get involved.
Thank you. So this is the end of season quiz. Question one. What was the average goals conceded per Premier League match for the 2021 season for Crystal Palace, obviously? 1.45, 2.13, 1.74 or 1.67?
Yeah, all too high for my liking, but one of them's right, I suppose.
Better be.
It was 1.74, and everybody got that right. Nice.
Yeah, well, so we conceded, what, 60...
66 goals conceded.
66, yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's not good, is it? It's not good at all.
Question two. How many clean sheets did Palace manage this season? 7, 8, 9, or 10?
I'm stunned that it's any of those. I thought I would have gone about 3.
Yeah, I'd have gone 3 or 4.
Which is nuts, considering that two of us went for Guaita for player of the season.
True. Yeah, but it would have been none without him, wouldn't it?
True.
Well, that's the case with most goalkeepers.
True.
The answer was 8. One of you got that right. And those were against Southampton, Sheffield United, Arsenal, Wolves, Fulham, Manchester United, West Brom, and then Sheffield United again.
Is there any truth in the fact that we didn't beat a team higher than 3 places above us all season?
So it depends how you take it. I think at the time that's true. But, for example, I believe Villa not finish more than 3 places above us? So I think it depends how you take it.
Well, Man United finished 2nd, so... But you know what I mean. We beat them.
At the time, that may well be the case, but I think that's one of those stats that doesn't mean a lot, really. Certainly, we sweeped a lot of points from the lower teams, which we've done the last couple of years, which is opposite to what we used to do, where we'd get a fluky win against the top 6 and then lose to the team that were 20th. So, whatever you prefer, who knows? Sam.
Question 3. Which player had the best goals per appearance ratio this season? Zaha, Mateta, Benteke or Schlupp?
Ooh.
I'm tempted to go for the obvious one, but actually when I'm thinking how many games did they miss versus how many goals they scored for this.
It's great to hear your thoughts out loud.
The answer was the obvious one, Zaha.
Really?
Really.
Best goals per appearance ratio, Zaha over Mateta.
Yep. His ratio was 0.36. I did write the other ones down, but I...
Okay, so maybe minutes per goal is better than appearances per goal.
I thought it was quite a sneakily worded question, you see.
Yeah.
Well, you are indeed a sneak. Well, there you go. I would not have got that. I'd have put him last out of those 4.
Question the 4th. How many shots on target did Palace muster this season? 124, 127, 132 or 135?
Muster. I mean, that's just a fucking ridiculous question, isn't it? Like, you could have at least had them like 20 apart or something. You're an absolute slave driver when it comes to these quizzes.
At least they're relevant to the season.
Yeah, there's no Kevin Bacon involved. Yeah.
The answer was 132, and that's a passing accuracy of 38% out of 349 shots overall.
Obviously.
Question 5. What was the result on Boxing Day 2020? A 0-0 draw, a 1-1 draw, a 2-0 win, or a 3-0 loss?
It's on the telly, wasn't it? BBC One, first ever game on telly on BBC One on Boxing Day.
Oh, bollocks, then I've chosen the wrong one. Bollocks.
The answer was a 3-0 loss away to Aston Villa.
That was when Mings got sent off.
I thought it was
off,
a Man United
it?
Game. I was going to say that is a game that I've totally blocked out of my memory. But after we discussed the best games this season, that and Burnley were some of the worst, I think. Yes, carry on. Sorry, Sam.
We're moving on to the portion of the quiz that's more about the season in general for all Premier League teams.
So you run out of Palace related questions.
We still want to depress us too much.
Which Premier League team had the highest number of red cards this season? Brighton and Hove Albion, Arsenal, Chelsea, or West Ham?
I'm just putting the answer I hope it is rather than any.
Although I think they're the same.
Arsenal had a couple the other day, so I've gone with them, but let's see.
I went Brighton.
It was indeed Brighton and Hove Albion. 6 red cards in total. The holders of said red cards are Lamptey, White, Mopay, B, Bissouma and everybody's favourite Lewis Dunk got two red cards.
Of course he did. And also Maupay managed to get sent off after the end of the game. So excellent on them.
True. Question seven. The youngest player to have played a Premier League game this season was 16 years, 9 months and 13 days old. He played in a game against Palace, but for which team? Manchester United, Aston Villa, Fulham or Sheffield United?
I think I should have gone Fulham.
I think I should have gone Fulham, but I've gone for Sheffield United.
Nick was right. It was Sheffield United and the player was Antoine Hackford.
Who scored. Oh, yeah, he's
very young.
Yeah. He scored as well last week, didn't he? Shows what playing the youth can do, doesn't it?
Hmm. Question eight. Which team was the most dispossessed in the league? Fulham, Aston Villa, Liverpool or Crystal Palace?
Gone for the obvious.
What, Palace?
Yeah.
The answer was indeed Crystal Palace with 402 dispossessions, which I'm not sure is a word, but there we go.
That's more than successful passes.
Do you know who our most dispossessed player was, incidentally?
No.
Excellent. Next question.
My professionalism knows no bounds. So because it wouldn't be my quiz without some really random questions, here are the random questions.
Right.
And this one is brought to you from Hambo, and perhaps a quiz topic for the future. This is Andros or Vandross. So is this quote from Andros Townsend or is it a Luther Vandross lyric? The ball is tipped and there you are, you're running for your life. Andros or Vandross?
I love the fact that Luther Vandross was one of David Bowie's backing singers for a while. It's incredible that, isn't it?
Was he?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone got it right. So well, I mean, it was...
Surely not going to come from Andros Townsend.
I don't know. He'd scored that one goal where he ran the whole pitch. The song is from the song One Shining Moment, if anybody cares.
Of course it is. Absolute banger.
You've never heard it.
No, I've never heard Luther Vandross at all.
Final question for this season.
Can I just say before you read this, there should be some speech marks around the word success. But Karen, read the question out.
You're just bitter because you lost that one. Following the success of the 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon quiz, which 1968 to 1969 player is 2 degrees removed from Kevin? Tom Vansittart, David Payne, Mark Lazarus or John Jackson?
I've only gone for Mark Lazarus because he was my dad's favourite player. That's the only reason I've gone for it.
I don't even understand the question, to be honest. But
so the answer was Tom Vansittart, and the degrees of separation. Kevin Bacon was in RIPD with Ryan Reynolds. Reynolds is co-owner of Wrexham, and Tom Vansittart, I can't pronounce his surname, I'm sorry, played for both Wrexham and Palace.
Of course he did. Scores on the doors, please, Sam.
Scores on the doors. So the leaderboard in third place is Mike with a score of 32. In with second place...
With a bronze medal.
The bronze medal. The silver medal goes to Chris with a score of 34. And shining example, gold medal, goes to Nick with a score of 51.
Blimey, I did well there. Yeah, can I play you every week?
You're on my wavelength, Nick.
Yeah. Can I play you every week? That's what I want to know.
Congratulations to Nick Gillard for that excellent win. Yes, what else can we say other than that's probably the peak of anything we've done on this pod? Okay, so...
Can I go back and change my game of the season answer? Because that was it.
you can indeed, yes. So right after this, we're going to get to listener feedback. We'll quickly answer everything that you've stuck our way in the last few days.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Funtime videos, choose your matchday squad, post-match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, so we asked people what they wanted us to discuss on an end of season pod across a couple of social media platforms. We're going to hit up the ones we can. Keep the answers fairly brief because we could probably go on for ages and ages and ages. And this pod's already running towards an hour.
Was one of those platforms Tinder?
One of those platforms was not Tinder. No, okay. We asked it across a couple of our current social media platforms. So let's start with a bit of Facebook. Mark Callaghan, thank you, Mark. Thank you to everyone that's written in. Talk about bringing some of the under-23s through. They're doing a great job. So let's ask, which under-23 player would you guys bring through, Chris?
Well, I've already praised Jake O'Brien, and that is my answer. He looked really good. I mean, the thing I want to single out about that was he looked like a young Gary Cahill. He was, you know, looking left and right. He was communicating with his fellow centre back and with the right back as well. So I'd really like to see him get some game time in the coming year. And you know, I'm hopeful that actually will happen. Let's see.
Okay, Nick.
This Omilabu chap seems to be scoring a lot of goals. I'd like to see him chucked in, see how he does against better defensive players.
Okay, I've already mentioned Rich Bagley, but yeah, obviously David Omilabu as well, just for the chant from the fans, apart from anything else. Jerry Cole, thank you, Jerry. Chris and co, apologies for Chris not being on. That's what we've got Chris Clark instead, that'll do. Who do you think will be the next Palace boss? Thanks for your good work. Enjoy the summer. We certainly will. Who do you think will be the next Palace boss? Not who do you want, who do you feel will be the next Palace boss? Chris?
I want it to be Sean Dyche. I think it's going to be Sean Dyche.
Okie dokie, Nick?
I want it to be this Fonseca chap from Roma, although I don't think he'd get the money. I've got a feeling it will be whoever loses the playoff final in the Championship.
Interesting. I've got the impression that it's going to be no one amongst the people that the press has been talking about recently. I think it's going to be someone out of left field. Let us see. So, going on to Twitter, one more point fanzine, for those of you that are old enough to remember it. Rank the 8 Premier League seasons in terms of how much you enjoyed them. I mean, that will take a fair while. So let's truncate it and say, what's your favourite Premier League season of this current time we've been up? Which one has it been, Chris?
Season with Big Sam. Easy, you know, having those, because it started so badly, and, you know, for the way that he turned it round and the way he got us playing was just awesome. You know, he may well be, insert legal disclaimer here, someone of, I don't know. No, I'm not even going to say it. Yeah. He may not be a character without his detractors, but he got us playing some of the best football I've ever seen us play. So, yeah, that season, easy.
Nick?
My favourite was the first one because I thought it would be fleeting. I loved watching Marouane Chamakh He played some fantastic football alongside Jason Punchin. It was good to see the players that brought us up, keeping us up. And it was just a kind of new experience for us to be playing with the big boys again. There were moments where we should have won the first game, but we were unlucky. We pulled out a few results that season. But also the season where we had Chris Tambour. That's got to be the moment of the whole eight seasons, hasn't it?
You can't choose two different seasons. You've already given your answer. This is getting greedy. I'm going to agree with Chris. I'm going to say Big Sam's season because I never felt that we were going to go down other seasons for that long. But that season, it really did pull us out of the abyss. Middlesbrough game, PVA scoring 1-0. That was, I don't think I've felt more at a game than I did that season. So that is my choice. JB7, who the hell is Jacob Montez? Hopefully we've answered that for you. I'm not sure any of us know, in all honesty. Be interesting to find out. Andy Hode, always kind enough to write in. I don't think a vast majority of those out-of-contract players will leave. It's not likely we have the money to just buy a brand new squad. Comment on that. I mean, so the players that are leaving, just a quick question really to you guys. Which ones do you think will stay and which ones do you think will leave? We're not basing this on any in-the-know stuff. Let's just go through who's allegedly out of contract. That's why Benteke, Schlupp, PVA, Andros, Sacco, Nathaniel Klein, James McArthur, I'm really not sure that's the case. Joel Ward, Gary Cahill, Scott Dann, Martin Kelly. Wayne Hennessy, Connor Wickham, Stephen Henderson, and Sam Woods. So, which one of those do you think we'll keep, Chris?
You only want me to answer one or just.
Let's go with which ones you'd like us to keep.
Okay, right. I'd like us to keep Benteke. Anyone who listens to this pod knows that, you know, I'm the world's biggest fan of Jeff Schlupp, purely for the song, but also for the way he's been one of our better players this year, in my opinion, when he's been on the pitch. So, yeah, absolutely keep him. Andros, I think, you know, really has been a star for us, so I want to keep him. Nat Klein, I'd like to keep as well. You know, there's a poetry to him being back with us. James McArthur, if he is out of contract, I definitely want to keep. Joel Ward, I think, is reported to be staying, and I definitely hope he is. Gary Cahill, similar. Scott Dann, there's reports that he is staying, but frankly, I just can't see a valid reason for keeping him on the playing staff at this stage. Martin Kelly, I do think, is a useful player for us, and the others, as far as I'm concerned, could go, with the exception of Sam Woods, who possibly I'd extend for another year just to see if he comes good.
Nick?
Yeah, there's not a lot to add to that, is there? Benteke's and Townsend have both been really good the last three or four games, or well, longer for Benteke, so I'd hate to see them go. And I think Townsend is a proper Palace player. He will be a Palace legend in time to come. The rumours that PVA are off to Galatasaray, aren't they? Other than that, I think the others are replaceable. Has Cahill got another season in him? I'm not too sure. He's been good for us, but he's also been bad for us. We need somebody a bit more consistent at centre-back. A lot depends on who the new manager is, doesn't it? Whether they stay or go.
I think you've put the nail on the head. It really does depend who's coming in. I'm going to say which ones I'd be absolutely gutted if we lose. I'd be gutted if we lose Townsend. I'd be gutted if we lose Nathaniel Klein, especially on the news of Nathan Ferguson being out for perhaps the rest of the calendar year. I'd be really gutted if Klein goes. And James McArthur, although I'm really not sure that his contract is actually up. But yes, I'm sure we're all going to have differing opinions on that. Mark Drew, new manager, must be arriving from the Championship. I mean, it's fairly likely, but I think that the club have kept the news of who they've interviewed and that kind of thing really close to their chest. So there's no point sort of making up more rumours. I think there's enough when you look around. I reckon we'll find out soon enough. Dave's Pinhead, Daniel Schilling. I'd like to ask the panel, if you were on death row, what would be your last meal? Chris.
Chicken Danzak.
That is so specific and so just rolled off the tongue. fair enough. I mean, I feel like that would need like some sundries with it.
Yeah, well, I can't be too fussy, can I? But, I mean, I've often thought about, you know, what my favourite meal is. I get interviewed about this sometimes in my other life as a politician. So I'd also specify a pint of ale with it as well, if I had the chance.
I don't think you're allowed alcohol. I mean, yeah.
They're about to kill me. I mean...
yeah. Nick?
I'd go for an all-you-can-eat buffet and just keep going back for another tiny bit of Papadom just to extend my life as much as I can, if not something with lots of garlic in to piss off the executioner.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm not sure what I'd go for. I might be one of those annoying death row inmates that orders a load of food and then refuses to eat it. just everyone off. Great question from Joe. At Joe Oliverius on Twitter. What style of football would you like the new manager to bring in? I'm going to answer this first, if that's okay with you, gents. One More Point fanzine replied saying a winning one. I mean, yeah, fair enough. I'd just like to see... We've obviously got a very good counter-attacking team and I'd like to see us go back to the old-fashioned balls down the flanks, crosses in, counter-attacking football. Nick?
What, you mean a manager that plays somebody in a position of inside right? yeah, I'd like us to see, like you said, utilise the attacking players we've got, although we've lost Eze, we might lose Wilf. I'm not sure if we've seen his last game at Selhurst, which would be a shame.
Oh, God, let's not discuss that. Come on now, let's not discuss that. Wilf's staying forever. Wilf's staying forever. Carry on.
I just want something that's more positive. The take the game to the other team and sort of a bit Pardew-esque in try and score more goals than the other team score against you, because we've got the players what can score goals. Let's utilise them.
Chris?
Clever counter-attacking, because I think I like exactly, I like the, I love the idea of what Nick's described. I was also at the Swansea game and have seen permanently scarred by that. You know, I also saw
they could go back up, the thought that Swansea could be back up and it could happen again next season.
We want to finish on an upbeat note. So, absolutely, you know, I like our counter-attacking tradition. I like our tradition of playing with wingers. I hope that whoever we bring in as our new boss understands and respects that tradition, and you know that we get. Ultimately, though, I think One More Point had a real point there with regard to just as long as the results are good, who really cares about the style? But that said, I think, you know, the feedback on this podcast and from its listeners over the last 3.5 to 4 years has indicated that actually style does matter. And if there is such a thing as a Palace way, it's counter-attacking and wing play. So hopefully we'll see some of that. Yeah, I mean,
that's the great debate. That spits Palace fans, doesn't it? People that are still behind Roy because he got the right amount of points. That's a debate that will never end. Palace Loyal has asked us to just talk about our training methods and injuries. And I think that's probably referring to Nathan Ferguson getting injured in training. I just want to say on that, I'm going to sort of be the honorary hambo here and say that none of us are none of us work for the club and we don't know about the training methods. Yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell. I mean, it's happened to Arsenal, it's happened to Liverpool before. There are sides that clearly work their players harder than others in training and it does cause extra injuries. I don't know whether that leads to more points in the Premier League or not. You assume it does or they wouldn't take the risk. It's a massive shame, but I don't know what else we can say on it. You'd think that it's probably worth at some point the club getting an interview with the injured players. You know, it'd be great to hear. It would have been great to hear from Conor Wickham when he was on the treatment table all those times. It'd be great to hear from Nathan Ferguson because, you know, somebody on the pod chat the other day on WhatsApp mentioned that they don't even know if Nathan Ferguson actually exists as a human being. It's sad, but I just think that the communication could be a bit more from those injured players rather than just coming from their own Twitter. which, you know, never covers the whole truth. It'd be great if we could get some interviews with him, but there you go. A couple more questions.
Sorry,
from,
Mike, can I just come in there with that? With the younger players, I was speaking to somebody else who knows a very good tennis coach, and they were saying there's been some research into younger players who've had to do lots of weight training when they're younger, when their muscles are still developing and the ligaments are still developing, are more prone to injuries. So it might be stuff that's happened before these players have been at Palace that's causing them to get injuries now. So it could be as simple as that, rather than what Palace are doing.
Interesting. I mean, in Conor Wickham's case, it's the fact that his legs are made of jelly. But there you go. That's a very good point. And this is the kind of thing that we really can't comment on because none of us know enough about it. A couple more questions from Keith Powell and from Richard Evans, just asking us who we think the next manager is. There's no point speculating. You know, we don't work for the club. We can have our guesses, but we're probably going to disagree. What we've heard, you know, might be conjecture. So we'll do some more pods. I'm sure we will over the summer. I think we're going to leave it there, gents, if that's okay with you. Obviously, thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone who's got in touch over the season. It means so much. Thanks to everyone who listens. You know, we've seen a lovely rise in listenership over this season, and it really means a lot. So whether you listen to us, whether you watch the Watch Along with DR, whatever you do, it's really great. And please do keep sending messages in. It makes us realise that people actually do listen to the show. I don't know when the next show will be. Probably when the next significant news comes out, whether it's a new signing, that kind of thing. We won't go silent over the summer. We'll do the odd pod. Obviously, it won't be necessarily every Sunday and every Thursday as it usually is during the season. But, you know, we'll put the odd one out when people are around, when there's news to talk about, and when you guys want to hear us. So in the meantime, thank you very much to producer Sam for the quiz, which Nick, I'm sure, will be celebrating long into the night.
Yes.
Thank you very much to... Oh, of course you will. Thank you very much to my panellists, Nick and Chris. Until next time, come on, you Palace.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by pitchdmm.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.